Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Yes, we're making babies here on Lunchtime Live, and the master of the National Maternity Hospital, Shane Higgins, is with me in studio. Shane, good afternoon. How's things?
Good, thanks, Andrea.
Before we get to listener questions, whatever your maternity fertility queries for Shane today, you can send in your questions. WhatsApp number is 087 1400 106. We want to talk about the free birthing movement. What is free birthing, after, first of all?
So free birthing is a conscious decision by an individual or a couple to deliver outside of the hospital setting, but without any healthcare professionals in attendance. So neither doctors nor midwives. So that's what free birthing essentially is. And we've probably seen a rise in free birthing, particularly since COVID and since the start of COVID. So it is something that's of concern to healthcare professionals. And as somebody who's paid by the state, along with my midwifery and medical colleagues, to look after patients during pregnancy, birth and after the delivery, it would be remiss of me to be saying anything other than I don't subscribe to it.
Okay. How common is it?
Well, it's very difficult to know because patients don't come to us. Now, some patients will have had some antenatal care through a hospital and may not tell their healthcare providers that that's their plan.
Yeah.
Of course, there are patients who get caught short at home and who end up delivering at home. And we've discussed that in previous topics. But these are couples or individuals who very consciously decide that this was their plan. Whether they communicate that to their healthcare provider or not is not always the case. So you'll have patients who have some antenatal care but then deliver at home. You'll have patients who perhaps don't have antenatal care and who deliver at home. And remember, there are home delivery, there are home birth services available through some of the individual hospitals, including our own, but also through the self-employed community midwives who are an arm of the HSE that provide home birth services. So if a home birth is something you aspire to and would like to consider.
But that's not this.
This is without. This is completely outside.
So it's nothing at all. It's really no engagement.
No engagement at the time of birth. They may have come to the hospital for bloods, for antenatal care, for ultrasound scans. But when it comes to the birth process, they have completely detached themselves from the care providers.
I suppose as a medic in the area, it's is it more high risk than choosing to have your baby at home?
I would believe it is, yeah, because if you're choosing to have your baby at home and you've got healthcare professionals in the home with you, they will recognise signs that are of concern, red flags. They will be in communication with the base hospital. The ambulance service has set aside teams that will be available should that patient need to be transferred to the hospital as a matter of urgency. And I do use the word urgency. Sometimes things do not go according to plan for a home birth. The patient needs to be transferred to the hospital urgently. It's about recognising those signs early in the process and transferring the patient so that they can be looked after properly.
Mm. So free birth, it is different to home birth, and I suppose that's the
point. It is. And that's the difference. You do not have healthcare professionals with you in a free birth situation.
So it's only then at the point of maybe the birth being registered that how we figure out really how many people are actually doing this?
And if we haven't looked after the patient at the time of birth and they present to us several days after the birth, we're not in a position to register them because we've had no encounter with them around the time of the birth. So they have to go to their GP. So it's outside the remit of our responsibilities.
How is it different then to, I suppose, like people, and I see this a lot now from talking to you over the last year, Shane, here on the show, every Wednesday at this time. More people, though, are looking for greater independence, though, when it comes to...
Yeah, and I think I totally respect the autonomy of the patient to be involved in any decisions that are made about their pregnancy, their labour and birth. But do it with your healthcare professionals. Do it in conjunction, in collaboration. Speak to your midwife, speak to your GP, speak to the self-employed community midwives. Those births are all attached to the national, our, the ones that are associated with us, we're aware of who's planning, we're aware of who's going to be looking after, we're aware of any history that's relevant to whether they should be delivering at home or not. And there are very strict criteria in place. And I know that doesn't appeal to everyone who feels, why am I excluded? The decisions are made based on best practice, based on the knowledge we have of the patient and with the patient's best interests at heart, not just the patient, but also the best interests of the baby.
If you had a, you know, it's like some assistance, even with a pregnancy doula or somebody like that, does that still count then as free birth?
Well, some of the patients would probably have a doula. But remember, a doula isn't necessarily a qualified professional. A doula is somebody, the definition of a doula is somebody who supports you psychologically through the birthing process. That's not necessarily a midwife, or it's certainly not an obstetrician. We know that there are some doulas who have a midwifery qualification, and certainly that's better than nothing. But again, I would always advocate that patients do this in conjunction with their base hospital or their community midwifery program.
And I presume then there's obviously no pain relief either then during labour if you're doing this.
No. But there wouldn't be if you were having a home birth either. I mean,
And then, like, you know, even though the pregnancy itself might have been straightforward, you know, nothing to say that difficulties couldn't present during the birth at home either.
Absolutely. I mean, just, you know, I can give you simple statistics. If you're a woman who's pregnant for the first time and who's labouring at the National Maternity Hospital, then you have a 10 to 12% risk of an emergency caesarean section in labour. You have a percentage risk of having an instrumental delivery. And that's not things that we do unless we feel they're absolutely necessary. So even for the most straightforward, uncomplicated pregnancy, things can happen in labour which would indicate that you require a caesarean section or an instrumental delivery. And if you're at home, it makes it more difficult to get you into hospital for those things to happen, which is why having a healthcare professional in the house with you who can recognise you're not making progress, there's some blood-stained liquor, concerns about the fetal heart, which has been auscultated throughout the whole labouring process by, if you have a midwife at home, she's listening intermittently to the fetal heart rate to make sure it's at an adequate, at a satisfactory rate for everyone to be reassured. So lots of things can happen.
Right, 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number, Shane. Questions coming in now just in relation to that and other elements of maternity as well. I'm pregnant with my first baby. I've been told that the baby has an anterior placenta. Yes. What does that actually mean and should I be worried?
So I use the term, that's a geographical description. It's just telling you where the placenta is attached to the wall of the uterus. And the only two words that you should be concerned about when it comes to where the placenta is low lying. If your placenta isn't low lying, it doesn't matter whether it's anterior, posterior, lateral, fundal. It just means that's the area of the uterus that the placenta is attached to. It doesn't mean anything. Some people feel that it will impact on their awareness of fetal movement if you've got an anterior placenta. That's not the case, because what you're aware of is the movement compared to yesterday and the day before. And the placenta doesn't move. So if the movement that you're getting today is the same as it was yesterday and the day before, that's fine. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Listener here has got in touch wondering, they're 10 weeks pregnant with their second baby, Shane. Their first delivery was a section, but I would love to try for a vaginal birth. My consultant thinks I should have a section again, but I would prefer not to. I'm wondering, why is he pushing for a section?
Well, he may have knowledge of what might have happened at the previous caesarean section. So if the previous caesarean section was uneventful, and again, bearing in mind the indication for said caesarean section, then most patients are eligible for a VBAC. They're eligible to attempt to have a vaginal birth. If, however, the previous surgery was complicated by an extension to the incision, so there was a tear extending up into the body of the uterus, so that might be a reason why your clinician is saying, your consultant is saying to you, no, I don't think it's a good idea. But certainly ask the consultant why they feel that a VBAC isn't indicated or a preferable option, or at least an option for you in this case. Because for the most part, and it's something that we're kind of seeing less and less of our patients having VBACs, and I certainly recommend it and encourage it. If there's no contraindication to you having a vaginal birth after one previous caesarean section, it's certainly something you should consider.
It's probably more a comment rather than a question, but listener says, I can't understand why people might choose to have a baby at home without the healthcare professionals. My birth was supposed to be normal. My eldest is 23 now, and I still remember the birth as it was absolutely horrific. So many things went wrong. I'm still so grateful to this day for the doctors and the nurses who saved both of our lives. Like, is independence, is that the really kind of the sole reason why people choose
Look, free birth. You know, I suppose I gave this a fair amount of thought over COVID because we saw an increase in this. And I think that there's a trust issue here that some patients feel. And there is at some level a narrative out there that if you end up in a maternity hospital, you're going to be put on a conveyor belt, you're going to be hooked up to oxytocin, you're going to have your waters broken, and with the intention of getting the baby out as quickly as possible. That is not the case. And I speak from a personal experience. I speak from as the master of the National Maternity Hospital. Patients' preferences are absolutely listened to and taken into consideration. Nothing is done to a patient unless we feel it's in their best interest and unless the patient consents to it.
Okay. Listener says, I'm 5 weeks pregnant. I have an underactive thyroid. I've been told that I'll have to be monitored. How serious is this?
As long as it's monitored and as long as you're on Eltroxin, which is a replacement therapy for patients with hypothyroidism, it's not a risk at all. So you should have bloods monitored regularly. You might have to have your dose titrated up or down to keep it within the normal range because the range changes depending on the trimester of pregnancy. If your hospital has an endocrinologist or an endocrinology service, or you're attending your own endocrinologist who's monitoring your thyroid function, it shouldn't be a risk at all. But that's the key. Mm. The key is making sure that your blood levels of T4 and TSH are within what's the expected normal range for the trimester of pregnancy.
Another listener, I listened to a podcast about free birthing. I thought it was quite scary. I felt maybe people could nearly be convinced, you know, that you should do it if you were of that mindset. I know there was an incident previously where an Irish woman died actually during free birth, and her family have issued a fairly stark warning as a result of that as well. 087 1400 106, the WhatsApp number. Okay, more questions as well. How long into trying for a baby should I start looking for assistance or help, Shane? We've been trying for 8 months, no success. My husband has kids from a previous relationship. We don't together though.
So again, that depends on the age of the patient. If you're under 36, you could try for a year before you seek assistance. If you're over 36, maybe 6 months. So again, depending on the age of your listener,
they should
consider that as a factor. Go to your GP. They can start the process, and they should start the process before referring you. Particularly if you're looking to be referred to one of the public fertility units. If you're going privately, you can contact your unit of preference, and they will start the investigations. But you know, bearing in mind, if you're trying, you've only got 12 chances per year with each ovulatory cycle. So, you know, if your cycle is 21 to 35 days, if your husband has conceived children previously, if you've no history of any problems with your pelvis, certainly going for 6 to 12 months without seeking assistance would be reasonable.
How many C-sections can you have? I've had 3 but would like another child, says this listener.
Yeah, okay, so the risk with that is, and I've delivered patients who've had 4 and 5, and I'm not certainly recommending that for your listener, but with each successive cesarean section, there's 2 risks. The risk is, one is that you have a low-lying anterior placenta, and that's, remember I used those words, low-lying. So that means that the placenta is embedded underneath the scar from the previous cesarean sections. If that is the case, then you're at, again, higher risk of having a condition called placenta accreta spectrum. This is where the placenta gets stuck to the wall of the uterus. It's very important that that's diagnosed antenatally because you'll be referred to a centre that looks after those patients, because some of those patients will end up with having a hysterectomy at the time of the cesarean section because of the risk of massive obstetric hemorrhage. So they're a very small number. We are one of the centres that looks after these patients. We would look after maybe a dozen to 14, 16 per year, but they are particularly high risk. So getting an early ultrasound scan to see where the pregnancy is attached to the wall of the uterus, that's the placental location, will start you on a journey. If it's anywhere other than anterior and low-lying, you're absolutely fine, and it's pretty much a fairly straightforward cesarean section thereafter.
Listener Shane, struggling with secondary infertility. Is there anything we can do before looking for assistance? We've been trying for 9 months, our other child is 3.
Well, I suppose, again, coming back to it, if you have a regular cycle and you can use ovulation prediction kits, which will tell you when you're ovulating during the course of the month and during the course of the cycle, that will help. You can, you know, the 3 things that you look for in primary or secondary subfertility are, is the seminal analysis normal? Are your fallopian tubes patent, and i.e. can they transport an egg to meet the sperm? And are you ovulating every month? And they're tests that can be done fairly simply and straightforwardly through your general practitioner without you having to go to a fertility clinic. If they are normal, keep going.
Finally, I've been on SSRI antidepressant medication for over 10 years. My psychiatrist recommends I stay on it during my pregnancy. What does Shane think?
I agree. I think changing your medication, your antidepressant medication in pregnancy might do more harm than good. And certainly your psychiatrist will know which medications you're on, whether they're safe in pregnancy. And if they are considered safe in pregnancy, you should absolutely stay on them.
And my blood pressure was high at week 37 of pregnancy, Shane. It rose higher after delivery. I'm now 15 days postpartum. I had an emergency cesarean. I am on medication. Is the blood pressure likely to drop, in your opinion?
Most of the time, it will drop to the point where you don't need to be medicated after the birth. So, you know, there's two types of hypertensive disease in pregnancy. One is called pregnancy-induced hypertension or gestational hypertension, which is more benign than the other one, which is called preeclampsia. Either might require you starting on a medication like labetalol, which may continue for a period of time after birth. But what you should be doing is monitoring your blood pressure, and then in conjunction either with your GP or the hospital, you can be titrated down and stopped over a period of time, and then you're back to normal.
Maybe just finally, I'm 5 months pregnant. I've never felt the baby kick. Is it too early for that, or should I start to feel worried?
Well, if it's your first pregnancy, I will say to patients that it might be up to week 24 before you actually start to become aware. And again, things like the anterior placenta might delay that awareness a little bit. But by week 24, you should certainly start to feel baby's movement. If you've had your 21-week scan and it's been very reassuring, well-grown baby, structurally normal, normal fluid, then I would not be that worried. But if you're concerned, go to the hospital. They'll do a quick scan. They'll show you the baby move. They'll show you the fluid. They'll show you the heartbeat, and everyone's reassured.
Yeah, I should say, you know, for people maybe over the Christmas period, if they're off, all of our chats, conversations, and a lot of the kind of advisory guidance, you know, that you've issued here on the show over the past year, people will be able to listen back to those podcasts. The Go Loud app, you can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. So some maybe Christmas listening for people if they've questions or queries until you're back with us. Until then, happy Christmas. I suppose the National Maternity Hospital doesn't shut down. So
no, it doesn't.
It's a busy period for you guys.
No, well, it's a very interesting thing, actually. Yeah. Christmas Day tends to be a very quiet day. And then St. Stephen's Day just kicks off again.
Yeah. People hold off, do they, for
they seem to.
Christmas dinner? Yeah. Shane Higgins, Master of the National Maternity Hospital. Thanks a million, Shane, for joining us on Lunchtime Live.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Hayley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results. Expert support. Lose more weight. Make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.